friends. Welcome back to the show. Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. It's Chaos Radio 92.7, 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. Streaming live worldwide on the internet, KAOS959.com. And our next guest today is Tim Dickinson. He's a former editor at Mother Jones Magazine and now a contributing editor at Rolling Stone. And he runs Rolling Stone's blog, National Affairs Daily. Welcome to the show.
Absolutely.
So listen, this article that you wrote recently for Rolling Stone just knocked my socks off. Bush's lapdogs, what happened to D.C.'s watchdogs? And I remember in the news just a couple of weeks ago, there was a general who, I guess he wasn't an inspector general, but, you know, that specific office, but it was an internal affairs type situation in the Department of Defense. And this general found himself under investigation for basically doing the right thing. And then it was just 2 days later or something that the story came out about the inspector general of the CIA and how General Hayden and them were going after him for doing exactly what his job is to do, to find out whether CIA agents are breaking the law and torturing people in their secret prisons.
Well, I think we should step back and talk about what an inspector general is. And after Watergate, there was a real cry for congressional oversight of the executive branch. And so they installed 29 of these people and everything from NASA to Department of Defense to, you know, just about any executive agency you can think of. And they're meant to be our eyes and ears there in the executive branch, people who are not subject to the claims of executive privilege and the rest of it. These people are supposed to report to Congress and tell us what's going on and audit programs and ferret out wrongdoing and all kinds of abuses. And so this guy at CIA, John Helgerson, was doing exactly what he was supposed to do under the law, which was investigate the legality of CIA's secret programs. And he was particularly looking into torture at the CIA's secret prisons and sort of second-guessing some of the legal decisions that had given this the stamp of approval in the Bush administration. And that was clearly not what the president wanted. And so that he and his CIA chief started an investigative unit to go after this guy, to sort of investigate the inspector general. So it's really unprecedented and quite a chilling maneuver. To avoid these problems of independent inspectors general, the president has done a very good job of stocking these posts with cronies, people like the daughter of the chief justice or special assistant to Fred Thompson or chief counsel to Newt Gingrich, all these people who would be better suited for work at a neoconservative think tank.
Okay, now, if I can play Cheney's advocate for just a second.
Sure.
Here, taking into account the fact, as you say, that a lot of these people are political appointees and cronies and really have no business in that position, are you certain that this guy, John Helgerson at the CIA, that he's not actually, you know, a criminal and that they're doing the right thing in investigating him?
I mean, obviously the CIA's got its own inner workings, but it's clear that this guy has ruffled a lot of feathers, and that's the job of an inspector general, right? The job of an inspector general is to sort of be the skunk at the picnic, the guy who questions whether the bosses are doing the right thing. But I mean, this guy's been constantly subjected to harassment. He was forced to take a polygraph test after the Washington Post started reporting on the CIA secret prisons to prove that he wasn't the source for that, and I believe that he passed. I don't know that anyone has really justified this in terms of any wrongdoing that he's done. It seems just a very clear shot across the bow at his independence and trying to clamp down on someone who's been politically inconvenient for the administration.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that's what it seems like. I just was wondering whether there were even any real allegations against this guy at all.
To my knowledge, and the CIA's inner workings are not. Not something that I'm really privy to, but
right.
by all press accounts, there's no indication that this person has been anything but an effective public servant and has done his job really quite extraordinarily well, especially given the company he keeps among the inspectors general.
And this guy Helgerson, who is he? Do you know about his background? Is he a bureaucrat who's hired for purely legitimate reasons for his expertise, or is he a political appointee?
He was appointed by Bush, and I believe that he more than I'm forgetting the exact details of his appointment. I apologize. It's been some time since I was going over his bio, but he was a career guy at CIA, so he's sort of not the cronies of the cronies, as you would think about somebody like Janet Rehnquist, who was the Health and Human Services Inspector General, who was obviously the daughter of the former Chief Justice.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you tell us about her story?
Well, she's an interesting one. She kept a loaded gun at her desk, and she delayed an audit of an embarrassing audit of the Florida pension system in response to a request by the Jeb Bush administration. So Health and Human Services does all sorts of audits of, they look after Medicare, and they have a role in the state pension systems, I guess. And so there was an audit that was going to show that there was some, I forget how many millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars of shortfall in the pension system. Jeb Bush, through someone who used to be Dick Cheney's personal assistant, contacted her and said, "Hey, would you not put this out until after my reelection?" And she did it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they had the General Accounting Office and the General Accountability Office go after her, and they did a report that basically found that she had compromised her independence of her post. She settled, you know, Medicare fraud cases for pennies on the dollar. The receipts from, you know, she's supposed to help. Health and Human Services has a huge multi-billion dollar budget, second I think only to the Department of Defense. And so she's supposed to help ferret out waste, fraud, and abuse, and sort of receipts for settlements under Medicare fraud cases dropped dramatically under her tenure.
Wow. It's almost like the Republicans get elected just to absolutely loot every penny they can out of the Treasury and then go for a while.
Well, you know, I don't know about that, but it's certainly this the case of Janet Rehnquist, I think that observation is appropriate.
Well, let's see. I kind of just want to go through the list.
Sure.
One of the most eyebrow-raising things is something that I remember reading about this somewhere and somehow spaced it out and forgot about it. I don't think we've even covered this on this show at all, is Filipino slaves brought to Iraq at gunpoint and forced to build the new super embassy there in Baghdad.
Yeah, so this is just an unbelievable story. And the allegations seem to be very credible, that there were, workers are brought into Iraq from places like Bangladesh and the Philippines. But so these workers have been brought from the Philippines and to, I think, Kuwait, an airport in Kuwait. They were, you know, transferring through Kuwait, and they were told that they were going to go work on hotel construction in Dubai. But apparently they were rounded up into a plane and then flown to Baghdad at gunpoint against their will, and then put to work building the U.S. embassy. And even just explosive allegations, and they seem to be coming from multiple sources, and there've been a congressional hearing about this. So I can't say that they're true, but there's certainly something to be looked at very closely. And if they are true, it's conscience shocking. But the Inspector General of the State Department, who is in charge of overseeing this operation, is a guy named Howard Cookie Krongard, who is the brother of Alvin Buzzy Krongard, who was the number three deputy at CIA under George Tenet, I think. Well, first of all, he called up the contractor involved and gave them something like 3 or 6 months advance notice of his visit. He went there by himself, which is particularly unusual for an investigation of something like this. Usually the IG would, you know, set up a team and they would go and unannounced and have visits and interview whoever they wanted to. But as it was, Mr. Krongard went himself, giving the contractor 3 to 6 months advance notice. He talked to six people who had been handpicked by the Kuwaiti contractor, and then talked to a couple other people. And he said he took notes on the backs of things. He didn't actually have people there taking notes for him or have any real method to what he was doing. And then he wrote up a summary report for the Republican Congress saying, "There's nothing to see here. I don't believe his allegations. There's nothing that we've seen that supports them." It's been described by one of the whistleblowers in the case as a cover-up. So it's hard to see it as anything other than purposefully just hard to see it as a public servant actually doing his job.
It's Anti-War Radio. I'm talking with Tim Dickinson from Rolling Stone magazine. The article is Bush's Lapdogs. And I have to tell you, Tim, I never believed in the Inspector General. I always thought, well, what a joke, an internal cop. They're going to hold themselves accountable and what have you. But I guess after reading this article, something I've learned is that, well, if you grade them on a scale, there actually used to be some accountability coming from some of these inspectors general before George Bush and Dick Cheney corrupted the process so badly.
Even with their efforts to turn these watchdogs into lapdogs, there have been people who have risen to the occasion and done the work, and then some of these people have been fired. So the CIA guy is a case of that. There's this guy, Clark Kent Irvin, who was the first inspector general for the Department of Homeland Security, and he was a longtime friend of Bush's. He'd served under the first Bush administration in the Thousand Points of Light program, and he was a lawyer pal under Alberto Gonzalez in Texas with Bush, and he got appointed, and then he actually decided to do his job, which was a very novel approach for many of these appointees. And so he started exposing lapses in airport security and doing all these things that were very politically inconvenient. And Tom Ridge, the Homeland Security Secretary at the time, called him into his office and what Irvin described as a series of come-to-Jesus meetings and berated him, saying, why aren't you on board with us? Why are you trying to embarrass us? Why are you not coordinating your spin with our press office? And Irvin seems to be a man of integrity and just told him that's not my job. You're completely misunderstanding what the role is here. And he was promptly fired. So it's he was a recess appointee. He was somebody who the Bush administration was so eager to have in their office that they put him there without congressional approval. And then they after he started doing his job, they didn't renominate him. So it's a curious case. And there have been, certainly some Clinton holdovers who have done extraordinary work. There's this guy, Glenn Fine.
Let me ask you more about this Clark Kent Irvin.
Yeah, Clark Kent Irvin.
Yeah. It sounds like he wasn't even really trying to get anyone in trouble so much as he was just basically testing the security and reporting on where there were deficiencies and so
right.
forth.
No,
right.
And that's the point, too. These are meant to be straight shooters. They're not supposed to be attack dogs. They're supposed to be people who are trying to keep America safe, trying to make sure that the departments that they're part of function well. And so this guy, it really took, he seems to be a real gentleman of integrity and took his job seriously and tried to make sure that the Department of Homeland Security was doing its job to keep America safe. And when it wasn't, he rang the alarm bells on that, which is exactly what he's supposed to do. And as a result, he was quickly out of a job.
Well, and then we wonder why we read that every time an undercover FBI agent attempts to sneak through a bomb or a fake bomb or a gun or whatever onto a plane, they get away with it 80-something percent of the time.
Right. No, it was just at LAX where they missed 75% of the fake bombs in a test. And indeed, there was just an email out that was leaked from the Transportation Security Administration that they were giving their screeners like an email heads up that FAA investigators were coming through and sort of gave them details about what the testers were going to be, the stacks of IDs that they had and what kind of techniques they were going to try and use to test the system, and still they're failing. I mean, it's just a joke. So
I'm going to hold my argument for free market and security and just move on to the next one. Yes, Glenn Fine. You brought up Glenn Fine at the Department of Justice, and he's there from the Clinton years, you say?
I'm a little unclear as to whether he was an 11th hour Clinton appointee or just the dawn of the Bush administration. I believe he was a Clinton appointee, but then I was having a conversation with someone who made me believe that he might be a Bush guy. But anyhow, in any of the case, he's done an exceptional job of doing his job. He was the one who exposed the FBI for abusing its powers under the Patriot Act to spy on average citizens without warrants.
And the national security letters?
The national security letters, exactly.
Uh-huh.
And so he, that's sort of the signature effort that he did. But he's a lot, as it was explained to me by a congressman I spoke to, a lot of the trouble that Alberto Gonzalez got into was because of Glenn Fine, because of the work that he did exposing wrongdoing at Department of Justice. And it illustrates why these people are so important. It seems like such, it can seem like kind of a wonky world of auditors and investigators, but these people really do help provide a vital check on the abuse of executive power.
Now, I think, honestly, the only report of his that I ever read was the unclassified version of his report on the Sybil Edmonds case, where he said that she was absolutely credible and that all her FBI bosses said that what she was saying was the truth and that kind of thing.
Mm.
And that's a big one to take on. Apparently, there are people with power who would rather not hear from Sybil Edmonds in public.
I apologize. I don't know who that is.
Oh, she was the FBI contract translator who blew the whistle on nuclear black market and bribery at the highest levels of the Turkish lobby and the Israeli lobby and that kind of thing.
Hmm.
Yeah, very interesting case. So, you might want to write about it.
But that's a clear case of here someone do, you know, taking on things that are clearly politically charged in an environment that is so obviously discouraged.
Right. Yeah. Again, I'll give Glenn Fine credit and in fact the statute that creates this office a little bit of credit where I used to give them none. I used to think the idea of having, you know, an agency hold itself accountable is just completely laughable, but apparently it can be done.
Well, and to keep it as laughable as possible, the president, the guy who oversees all the inspector generals is this guy, Clay Johnson III, who is President Bush's prep school pal from Andover Prep School and also his roommate at Yale. And this guy is the overseer of the inspectors general now, you know, so that he's the one who tries to keep them in line, and by keeping them in line, he was testifying to Congress about the proper relationship between inspectors general and their department heads as a collegial one, and people can't we all just get along and, you know, try and look at, you know, financial things rather than getting into the inner workings and
that's
the appropriateness of what's going on.
That's what he said to Congress on TV, that this is how it ought to be?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to say that in public, though, right?
I mean, to hear Clark Kent Irvin talk about it, he had all the IGs get together and sort of sign a series of principles that sort of amounted to a loyalty oath to the department heads that they worked for, to say that they were, you know, sort of on board on the same team rather than independent and often adversarial roles. So it's been a very clear effort to quash the independence of these offices, and as one of Howard Krongard's investigative deputies said, to keep working the BS cases and not rock the boat with more significant investigations.
Yeah. Let's see, I think you said at the beginning there are about 28 or so of these IGs?
There are two levels of them, but the president appoints, I think, 28 or 29.
Mm-hmm. And then, right. And you say in your article that more than a third of these guys are outright political appointees with no skills, only connections.
Well, a third of them, according to a House study, had previously worked in a Republican White House. These are the Bush appointees, and under the Clinton era, there were none that had previous White House political appointee experience. And then fewer than a fifth of them in the Bush era have experience as auditors versus as professional auditors versus two-thirds of them who had that experience in the Clinton administration. So clearly there's been an effort to politicize and dumb down, in the words of one of the congressmen I talked to, politicize and dumb down the office. It couldn't be more clear.
Now, you also brought up in the article very briefly stolen rocket technology. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, there's this guy, Moose Cobb, who is the Inspector General at NASA, who was handpicked by the NASA administrator at the time to become the Inspector General, which is a clear conflict of interest and obviously not the way Congress intended this to happen. But Bush has sort of allowed his department heads to handpick many of the inspectors general who will be watchdogging them. But this guy, there was a breach of the NASA servers and something like $2 billion worth of sensitive, or at least rocket technology that the Department of Defense deemed sensitive, was stolen. And instead of reporting that, Moose helped cover it up, helped sort of hush up this idea that this stuff had been stolen. And then when he was pressed on it, he said, well, it wasn't actually stolen because we still have a copy. And so and that was enough to drive Senator Grassley of Iowa into conniption fits. I mean, it was, you know, this guy is just an absolute joke. He, to quote his, he's the counsel that Clay Johnson heads up that sort of oversees the inspectors general looked into his work and just said that he deserves to be fired. This was the outcome of their investigation. And according to the testimony of Moose Cobb's handpicked assistant, and I'll quote this, Mr. Cobb's arrogance, his abusive bullying style, absence of managerial experience, limited understanding of investigative processes, egotism, and misplaced sense of self-importance make it impossible for him to successfully manage and lead an organization. But this guy's still there at NASA.
Well, I really wish I could remember who it was that wrote this. It may have been the other Scott Horton over at Harper's Magazine blog. It's on the tip of my tongue. I just read it last night, I think, that the Bush administration at this point is simply a cover-up machine to keep these people out of prison. And that there's really nothing more to the administration's policy at this point except staying out of jail past January 09.
There's some truth to that.
Oh, man. All right, now, tell me about this guy, Joseph Schmidt, at the Department of Defense. That was an interesting case.
Yeah, here's sort of the classic crony. He's the son of a former far right congressman from California who ran to the right of Nixon in the 70s for president. He's actually also the brother of Mary Kay Letourneau, the statutory child rapist. But so neither here nor there. But he's just a very, he worked for the Reagan administration, was an assistant to Newt Gingrich, and was in the Federalist Society, and just a real connected guy. And he had no experience as an auditor or an accountant, and yet he was installed to oversee the Pentagon's $500 billion budget. And so when Abu Ghraib came about, he did a sort of Howard Krongard-like investigation and came back and said, oh, this is just a few bad eggs at the lower levels and not, as we've subsequently found, the sort of metastasis of these torture memos that were produced in the Bush White House and promulgated by Donald Rumsfeld. And so he spent most of his time researching the Baron von Friedrich von Steuben, who was the George Washington's first inspector general for the Continental Army. And he spent several months personally redesigning the logo of the Inspector General Office to include von Steuben's family motto, which is always under the protection of the Almighty, or something like that. But so he was basically fritzing and futzing around in the office and constantly sort of blocking investigations into Rumsfeld deputies. There was a famous Boeing contract where the Department of Defense decided to lease refueling tankers from Boeing for something like $5 billion more than it would have cost to purchase them outright.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And just an incredibly corrupt kind of deal. And Congress asked Schmidt to go look into it, and so he did. And he talked to Rumsfeld, and he talked to Wolfowitz, and then he talked to the White House. And after much deliberation, he decided not to include any of the testimony from Wolfowitz or Rumsfeld, just felt that that wasn't actually relevant to the case. And then he worked with the White House lawyers to black out the names of White House figures who may have been involved in approving this contract and abetting the corruption that was going on there. So it's just clear that his MO was to help the White House avoid accountability rather than push for accountability in the Department of Defense.
And now, when he wrote this report saying that Abu Ghraib was the result of bad eggs, was that before or after the Taguba report?
You know, I'm not sure the timing on that. I think this was very quickly after the fact, and he just sort of went there and took a look around and said, "Oh, I can't figure out why anyone would think this was something that we would do." You know, so it was very much in the spirit of that Krongard investigation of the Kuwaiti embassy. It was sort of like, okay, here's something ugly that's been alleged. I can't see that this has anything to do with a broader pattern here in this administration, without any formal investigation.
And now you describe him spending months and months redesigning the seal. Sounds like he has an easier job than me. And then now he works for Blackwater?
Right. Now he is the COO of the parent company of Blackwater. So, he was supposed to be investigating the work of contractors and did a very poor job of that. And then took a plum job at the helm of one of the major Iraq contractors. So it's the revolving door is sort of sickening there.
Yeah, the iron triangle. Oh, and you also say that he was replaced by a guy named Claude Kicklighter, who apparently is just a Wolfowitz associate.
Well, he's a guy whose career was certainly advanced by Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz, and his last gig was overseeing the transition from the Coalition Provisional Authority to the Iraq Embassy, sort of the transformation of one corrupt institution into another. So I don't have much to say about him. He's fairly new on the job, but not someone who inspires a lot of confidence per his resume.
Yeah, certainly not. Well, I really appreciate your time today. Everybody, again, the article is called Bush's Lapdogs. It's in Rolling Stone. And, oh, also, I wanted to mention, I saw at your blog there at Rolling Stone, National Affairs Daily, that some Ron Paul and Tears had been picking on you in email. So I wanted to apologize on behalf of them and hope that we can all get along in the future.
Listen, I don't agree with a lot of what Ron Paul says, but I really appreciate the Ron Paul phenomenon, and I wish that Ron Paul supporters could be a little less paranoid about people complimenting them, even with a little bit of humor, because it seems to fall on deaf ears.
Okay, well,
they seem to interpret it as an attack. God bless Ron Paul. I think he's a really important voice to have in the debate.
Well, and just remember, there are a lot of us out here who don't send an email at the drop of every hat. Also. We're out there silently laughing at your joke and then moving on.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot for your time today, everybody. Tim Dickinson from Rolling Stone Magazine.
Thanks a lot. Take care.